Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice of Brian Brown, the creator of the Brown Briefly. Together we, the Brieflys, keep Brian's creative flame alive by bringing to you every week another episode of intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy, always guided by Brian's mantra of less is more, more or less. Let me introduce the Brieflys, as we always do. Engineering the show from behind the big board at the Voice of Vachon's Gene Bosch Broadcast Studio in bustling and bodacious downtown Vachon is our intrepid retired Alaska airline captain and my fellow treetop flyer, Truman O'Brien. Good morning, Truman.
Good morning. Good morning.
Also present in the studio today is the newest member of the Brieflys, our very own fixer of ferry service and new fire district commissioner.
Ooh, that's right.
Amy Dreyer.
Yeah, I know. I need one of those hats, right? Oh. Yeah. I think
you need a blessing.
Okay, thank you.
Exactly.
Condolences.
Yes, yeah. I will take it. No, and I see in the script there the fixer is in quotes. So look out, kneecaps. Is that what you're saying?
Well, you know, fixer is a term that's been thrown around quite a bit lately in the news, I wanted to be careful about that. Yeah. Not zooming in, but here, present with us, is island historian extraordinaire, Bruce Hallman. Hi, Bruce.
Hey, good morning. Good to be here.
Yeah, and Kevin is somewhere, what, up in the San Juans?
He's making his way north toward the Broughtons, which are island group sort of at the south end of Johnstone Strait at north end of Vancouver Island.
So he's the wind calms down.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right. It's been pretty wild out there.
Yeah, we're supposed to get almost a 30-mile-an-hour gale, or not gale, but gust today.
Right.
Yep. So right here. And it's our pleasure that today we're joined by actor, producer, director, singer, dancer, a few other things probably, Sarah Howard, also known as Vixie Post. How you doing, Sarah?
I'm great. Hi. Thanks for having me.
No, it's a great pleasure. And I'm a former bartender and bar attender, Craig Bellis.
In which proportion?
More of the latter, than the former. As per our usual practice, let's take a moment and check in with everyone about what special things they've done the last week. Amy, why don't we start out with you?
Yeah, is it alarming? Should I be alarmed that I have more and more difficulty remembering what actually happened last week?
No, we all check our calendars.
Okay, I did. I was like, oh, wait, hold on, let me look. It was First Friday. It was our first Friday of the summer to close down the street, and that was amazing and fun and great, and there was the Pride Street Dance and a bunch of vendors on the street and really just starting to feel more and more like what it was intended to be. So I had a great time at that. And then, I've been doing amazingly interesting trainings on public records, open public records and open public meetings for the fire commissioners. And if you didn't catch the sarcasm, there it was. But I'm learning more and more about open public records and public meetings and very, very glad to know it and how to comply to the nth detail. And if I ever have a question, Craig, I'll just call you.
Right. I'll have an exciting answer for you on that topic, I'm sure.
You have to do the PDC form, the public disclosure and all of that. Tell them all about your financial history.
If you thought open records training was interesting, wait till you read that. Indeed. And put you right to sleep.
That's funny. Bruce, I didn't mean to cut you off, Amy. Was there anything else? I mean, I'm sure there was, but...
No, that was what was in my calendar.
Okay. Bruce, what were you doing this last week?
Been an interesting week. We just sent off all the printed material for the new museum exhibit this week. So that's off to the printer. So if you've ever done a book or a publication and at galley stage, it's sort of like, it's got to be off. And once it's off, you know, it's done. So every misplaced comma, every spelling error, I'm sort of like, oh, man, you just go through that. But it's very exciting. And so we should get them back in about a week and a half and start installing it. So it's going to be very exciting. We had an interesting, when you enter the museum, the sort of redesigned museum, in the entry hall, there's going to be a full life-size sort of mural of a Columbia mammoth, which was here on Vashon Island. They were here on. We have some relics and some teeth and tusks and that kind of things from those guys. And so it's like, you know, 10 feet tall.
Wow.
And it's sort of, but we started putting it up and it peeled off the wall. It was one of those great. They had told us we'll use this primer. So we did. But it was the wrong primer, so we had to strip everything off and reprime it, that kind of stuff.
Oh, my gosh. Geez.
But the exciting thing this week is Vashon Dance Theater had an incredible set of performances this weekend. Sort of a retelling of the backstory of Dracula, set in a small German village. And choreographed and sort of developed by the director of Vashon Dance. And it was spectacular. But I went because my six-year-old grandson was one of the black cats at the beginning. So he's been in the Nutcracker, and now he's been in Dracula, and he just loves dancing. It's really interesting to see a little six-year-old find a passion like that early on.
And oh, that's
so
cool.
Yeah,
so that's great.
But if you didn't get to see it, you missed a spectacular performance.
But didn't Grandpa get video of it?
I will get it. They videotaped it. So.
Okay.
I was afraid to walk up to the stage with my phone.
That's right. That's my grandson up there.
Right there.
That's cool. Truman. Oh, wait a minute. I was going to ask you, Bruce, aren't they going to have a full cardboard cutout of you as you walk into the... No? Okay.
Can it be one of those things where I, like, stick my head through pretend to be Bruce Holman?
We do have that. It's the ice cream social. The Friday night before Strawberry Festival, you can come out, and we have a giant ice cream sundae with head cut out so you can stay. And then we'll walk up and smash you with strawberry shortcake.
No,
promise? Wait, you can't take that back. You cannot take that back. Right. I demand satisfaction.
There you go.
You will have it.
There you go.
Oh, my. Truman.
Well, I had an exciting day yesterday. I discovered that under that big pile of moss that I had tied up to the dock was a boat.
Oh.
It's amazing. There was actually a boat there. And
did you fire it up?
Not yet.
Okay.
I'm not that brave yet. I'm getting there. No, I hired a young man to come out and demoss the boat. And gosh, he's just doing a great job. It looks wonderful. I'm very excited.
That's good.
I'm going to actually get to use the darn thing this year. So.
That's great. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I know you are. I can see that look of anticipation on your face.
And
there,
the great cooking you do on
it. Yeah,
too.
Indeed. Wow. Indeed. Yep.
Yeah. You also had a Boeing airplane experience this weekend, this last week, too, didn't you?
I did.
Didn't you have a door almost leave our airplane?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was landing back at the airport here, and we have a baggage compartment up in the forward part of the airplane. It holds about 100 pounds, and it has a quite large door on it. And just in the flare, just getting ready to touch down, bang, this door popped open, and standing wide open, I was like, whoa, kind of got my attention. There's not a big deal. But evidently, I either didn't latch it properly or I don't know, but it popped open. So
we just hope it doesn't happen again.
Yeah. I told these guys we need to put a DB Cooper vane on it. And people don't know what that is. But on the 727, after the DB Cooper incident, they developed a little
airfoil.
Yeah, airfoil like thing. So that when you speed came up, this thing would rotate and would put a block over the rear air stair door so it couldn't open. And even if you tried, it wouldn't open because this thing was holding it. So I thought, well, we can just put one of those on the airplane.
We could. I hope we don't have to do that.
Yeah, me too. But yeah, we might do it. Just put a little latch. You know, a little latch.
Anyway. Sarah, you've probably been pretty busy getting ready for your show.
I've I've been pretty busy. I don't want to bore you with my week. I mean, my week's going to be like, I went to the printers. But, you know, I did make it. P.S. It was all I could do not to make a Boeing joke when you were talking about that. But I was like, you know what? I'm just going to be nice. Yeah, I made it to the, it was the, I didn't realize it was the first closed, closed road on First Friday. That was really fun. I actually walked the whole way, which I haven't had the chance to do. I don't think I even did that last year. It was really fun. Mm-hmm. The road closure was really fun. The Vashon Theater was really fun. I made it over to the Vashon Wine Shop and the Village, which was really good. I guess I was really hungry that day. I had like three plates. I thought everyone was going to share them, but it ended up being just me, and I was happy about it. But, yeah, that was really fun. They've got some really good food over there. And then stopped by Sugar Shack really briefly for their first concert. It's really coming together.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this summer is going to be really fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So those are the fun things.
A lot of things. You've been busy.
I've been busy.
So how about you, Craig?
Well, the first Friday, I, of course, had to be in the little pop-up car show.
Oh, were you in that?
Oh, yeah.
That was, yeah, it was right in front of the Island Queen over here. I didn't realize that once I was in it, I couldn't get out of it until you opened the roads up again.
Fair warning, some of those rumors didn't make it to all of the
ears.
That's
true.
But it's Vashon.
Yeah,
I know. Right?
Yeah.
Patience.
Yeah. That means you can leave anytime you want to. Or you can check in, but you can't check out.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
And the whole Friday night, first Friday was great. I went down to the theater, and our guest from last week, Ms. Hawks, was down there making the drawings on the sidewalk, and everybody was participating. It's funny, actually, as the evening went on, the center of gravity was there in front of the Vashon movie theater.
It pulled it down, because a lot of times it's closer in near like the pharmacy where, you know, sort of the restaurants are. So it's really interesting to see, you know, if you build it, they come. Mm-hmm. Classic cars, dancing, and it was great. I feel like kind of helped pull people all the way through.
The fabulous weather didn't hurt either.
Yeah.
That was a great, I'm not done yet. Here. My wife's birthday was this weekend. We had a great time with that. We went to a Cert barbecue at one of our guests that we've had on the show several times, MJ Witt. He had a bunch of people for the Cert group. That was fun. Then we went over to a friend's house that has a restaurant over in Port Orchard. They made a huge meal for us, and that was terrific. But the one thing I thought was kind of interesting is, you know, Apple has now incorporated AI into their software, and they've actually done it already. They announced it like yesterday, and it's already there. And I had downloaded it, and I asked, "Can you write something really nice for my wife's birthday?"
You did not.
I did. And her birthday was already gone. And she and I talk about AI all the time. And I showed it to her. I said, "Look at this. I just asked Siri or whatever for this nice note for your birthday. And you want to read it?" And she goes, "Wow, that's really nice." I said, "Yeah." It took them about a half a second for it to appear.
Really?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. It was really.
Now, do you do that on Siri? Is that where you do it?
Yeah, okay. But you got to download the latest app. Yeah, right on your phone.
Oh, I'll be darned. Okay. Yep.
So that was mine. Let's talk about, before we talk to Sarah specifically about all the great stuff she's got coming up, today is a significant day, as are all days. It's 24 days until Heritage Museum opens or reopens.
Who's counting?
Yeah, really.
You are desperately, I can tell.
That's July 5th, is it not?
July 5th.
Which would be the day after the 4th of July. Yep. The first day you can count on the weather being good.
Yes, and another first Friday.
So. That's right.
Well, yeah.
That's right. 38 days until the start of Strawberry Festival, which is July 19th. Getting close.
It is. And if you want to volunteer, they are certainly looking for volunteers. So head on over to thisisvashon.com and find out how to volunteer.
Thisisvashon.com.
Yes.
Okay. This day in history, 1935, inventor Edwin Armstrong gives the first public demonstration of FM broadcasting in the United States at Alpine, New Jersey. Hmm. I thought that was apropos.
It is, totally.
1936, the Presbyterian Church of America was founded in Philadelphia. That's apropos because I'm looking right out the window at it. Not the one in
36? Really?
Yeah, not the one in Philadelphia, but yep. In 1959, Postmaster General bans D.H. Lawrence's book Lady Chatterley's Lover.
Good for him.
And it was doggone it all.
Yeah.
It was about time.
Yeah.
But that was overruled by the U.S. Court of Appeals in March of 1960,
which
a few
is
months
appropriate.
Later.
Which is appropriate.
That's,
yeah,
that's right.
60.
I got just a few more. 1963, U.S. President JFK says segregation is morally wrong and that it is time to act. And once again, it's about time. 1969, David Bowie released Space Odyssey. Just in time for the first Apollo 11 lunar landing, although I understand he didn't write it for that, mm-hmm. but it just happened to coincide with that. And finally, in 2021, which was 3 years ago, a U.S. lobsterman survives being swallowed by a humpback whale off the coast of Provincetown, Massachusetts, and spit out with a very badly broken leg.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. You were in Provincetown just the other day, weren't you?
I was, actually. And I was. We just played the song by the Decemberists about the whale, you know, the belly of a whale. So there you go.
You didn't get swallowed by a whale while you were there.
I did not.
Okay,
no,
that's
no,
good.
Thanks.
All right, today is National Corn on the Cob Day, National German Chocolate Cake Day, and King Kamehameha Day.
I have an interesting story about German chocolate cake.
I thought you would talk about King Kamehameha.
Yeah, all the money.
You
all
got
the
us
money
misdirected
was
there.
German chocolate cake is not German at all. I discovered this when I was teaching in Australia, and one of the kids' birthday was coming up, and his favorite cake was German chocolate cake. So we went to bakeries in Melbourne asking for a German chocolate cake. Well, they had never heard of it.
Ah.
You know, it's a very American kind of thing. And I've always thought, well, it was developed in Bavaria or someplace like
right.
that, German chocolate. It's actually named after the German Chocolate Company, which was in like Kansas or someplace like this.
Oh.
And this guy had a chocolate recipe for a cake, chocolate cake, and it was called German chocolate cake. And so that's where it comes from. So it has nothing to do with Germany.
Well, there's a bit of trivia.
Isn't that interesting?
There
interesting.
You learn something new right here on right KVSH. Here, right.
Well, there's one other thing about that. It's not chocolate either.
No.
No, it is chocolate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The icing isn't, though.
Right? Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
All right. Hey, let's turn to Ms. Sarah Howard. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks.
I'm sure glad that you're here today. We want to talk to you about not only the event that you've got coming up on the island here in a couple weeks, but a little bit about yourself. Amy, did you have a question you wanted to start
out
with?
Well, I did, because I realized as long as I've known Sarah, I've never really heard your Vashon story. You're like coming to Vashon story, which is rare, because I feel like anytime you meet someone, you know, in some places, the first question you ask is, so where do you work? Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right.
What do you do?
And yeah, you know, or in some places it's, you know, so how many kids do you have? And I feel like on Vashon, the entree question is, so how'd you get here? So Sarah, how'd you get here?
How'd I get here? I came to Vashon. I moved to Seattle from Los Angeles in 2008, and I came to Vashon to visit with a friend and was immediately, I was living in Ballard, and was immediately just like, yes, yes, yes. I would come and stay on the weekends, and I was just like, oh, this, yes, there was just no doubt it was my spot. And so I was working at a restaurant in Ballard at the time, who also had a restaurant, Endeline Joe's in West Seattle. I'm sure a lot of us know that from waiting for our ferry, missing our ferry. And so I transferred over to Endeline Joe's and moved to the island. And there was, I had to move off the island probably 3 years in and had to live in West Seattle again for 2 years. And then I got the chance to move back after 2 years, and I took it, and there's no other place that I would be. I mean, besides like Mexico or, you know, and my multiple other dream homes that I'm will have eventually. But this is definitely my home base. It's the best.
Right. So. Mm-hmm. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in North Carolina.
Oh, North Carolina. Mm-hmm.
The coast.
Okay.
Yeah.
You must have left there fairly early. You don't have any residual.
Yeah. I mean, I I was born in Indiana, lived in Pennsylvania as a young child. Like, we kind of moved around a little bit when I was young, and landed in North Carolina when I was in like fifth grade. So I missed all that real formative, but I still got it sometimes.
I was going to say,
if I need it, yeah, I got it.
And when you go back there, does it come back?
Yeah, or when you're talking to people, it happens. Or there's some, you know, there's just some words that slip. Anything with like that A at the end, you know.
I do the same thing when I go back to Texas.
Oh, are you from Texas?
I slip right into it.
Yeah, it just kind of comes back. Yeah. But the small town thing's something I've done a lot. Like, I gravitate towards small towns, it seems like. I was raised in a small town. I lived in Big Bear Lake, California. There's another small town, like a mountain, not an island, but the similar. Mm-hmm. I always like tend to go to like isolated little small towns. The people are good. This is particularly great because the city's so close. Mm-hmm. This is the best. Don't tell anyone.
Wait, yeah, that's right. We're not telling anybody.
Don't tell anyone.
Except for the thousands of listeners that are out there all over the world.
Yes, they are.
I was going to ask you a question about a little bit more about your background. You've worked in acting and production and some other areas, have you not?
Yeah.
And what's that all about? How'd you get into that?
You know, what's that all about? I think it's, yes, I worked in like television and film a lot when I lived in Los Angeles. And when I lived here, there was an impending writer strike in 2009. That's how I got from Los Angeles to here. That's why I came to Seattle. I was dating somebody who lived in Seattle, and I had an agent here, so I was like, "Ooh, that'll be great." Mostly commercials and stuff here, not a lot of film or television, love that job. It's the best job in the world to me, is working on television or film. It's like the spirit of play all the time, and I always loved that. I always kind of knew when growing up, I always wanted to be a dancer. That wasn't something like we were able to do financially, but I was always a musician. And I kind of always like to put things together, you know, like produce things, like it's curate, you know, find producers, find other dancers and stuff, and like put together a show. Even when I was little, I loved to put together shows.
You were a young project manager.
And didn't pay very much.
Sounds a little bit like that. Mickey, who was the actor in the 30s?
Mickey Rooney.
Yeah, when he was a kid, we're gonna put on a show.
We're gonna put on a show, and I'm like, no, you stay there. Okay, here we go. You know, it was a little bit like that. And then I moved to Los Angeles to pursue music, and then ended up having like the day job of television and stuff, and just really was. I mean, it's amazing. You can't do things like that on, you know, some indie films and stuff, but it's hard to do things that big of caliber, like what you can do at Warner Brothers and things like that. So just watching stunts, watching things explode, watching just all the things that happen was really exciting to me. And then when I moved to Seattle and those opportunities were like, you know, after that writer's shake, there really wasn't anything. That's really what got me going in producing. Make your own stuff. And that's kind of what I started to do. And it grew from like dancing and singing into like, you know, it's grown into a lot of different, you know, areas, a lot of different performers and disciplines and stuff.
I see that you constantly have your fingers in that sort of thing. You were involved in the indie film that was being filmed here several months ago.
Yeah, I worked in production on that. That was the first time I'd ever been like off camera. So, I mean, I understand how movie set works, you know, been around for a long time on that. And you worked as a stand-in for a long time. So stand-ins are kind of like somewhere between like talent and crew. So, you know, not on camera. So you see a lot, you learn a lot about all those things. So, and that was great fun. I love that work. I love making movies. It's an amazing thing. It's pretty an exhausting thing, though. You must
long days.
Know that it's a long day. Thank you, Vashon, for taking That's care right. of us and feeding us and housing us.
Exactly. And giving us bottles of wine. That's right. You said you played an instrument or more than one instrument. What did you play?
Yeah, I play guitar and piano.
Okay.
My mom had me in piano lessons. I used to, you know, growing up, I'm singing and playing piano in church. That was like how I got into music. And so, you know, both of my parents, North Carolina, right? We grew up in church. And when my parents divorced, we were in Southern Baptist with her, and then my dad was in Pentecostal church. So we were hallelujah, praising the Lord, dancing, were flying, tambourines were going, there were drummers. I mean, it was like, it was a party. It was a great experience. And yeah, and so with it, through that, I was taking piano lessons, you know, sort of like the, you know, the old boring lady at church piano lessons. And if anybody grew up taking music lessons, I mean, you have to be really passionate about it, or you get, you know, it's hard as an 8-year-old to go every week to a music lesson. So by the time I was 14 or so, I had discovered guitar and rock and roll and stuff, and kind of went on a different tangent. But yeah, I started like gigging and writing music. You know, when I was 18, I started like traveling and doing like music gigs and stuff in North Carolina. And
Truman. So I know that you're a wonderful voice actor, because I was lucky enough to engineer the Pinatelliqua, the Miss Olsen incident.
That's right.
Yeah,
written by our own brilliant Amy Dreyer. And you were great, just terrific doing that. And by the way, that was a really fun thing to do.
Thank you.
To engineer that group.
Thank you.
They were such a wild bunch to have.
Save the date. I'm not going to announce. Well, I think it's all nailed down, but coming this October, Pinatelliqua and the Chautauqua incident.
All right.
That's right.
Is it going to be another radio play, or are you going to do?
Indeed.
Excellent.
It is.
Yes. Excellent. I'll volunteer to engineer.
Okay. I like it.
Business done right here on the radio.
That's right. We got it here. Yeah. Signed in blood. So what got you into the burlesque and performing the cabaret and all of this? And what's the difference between, I mean, we're talking about burlesque, striptease, cabaret, all of that. What got you into that?
It's a really good question. I think where burlesque started is people have different opinions, but I like to go back to the original, the way I see it, and the way, like when... So burlesque can be like a satire, right? Yeah. So even if, you know, back in the 1500s or 1600s, people were mocking, you know, the king and queen, and they'd have something out on the street where they were like, oh, she's got it. You know, we've all seen these silly movies. So that's a burlesque of sorts, right? So it's like a satirical piece. So a lot of audiences in like the vaudevillian days, they were going to sort of, you know, vaudeville theaters, not the theaters that the rich and things could afford. And it was like, it was a social commentary. There was a lot of those sorts of things. And when that, and so those were like a burlesque, right? And so as those started to lose popularity, they brought in like the striptease, you know, and made it had a little bit of that. And so that's where a lot of people think like burlesque originated in that striptease. So burlesque is the art of tease. And burlesque has become the art of tease. But I enjoy you know, having a lot of different performers of a lot of different disciplines together, sort of a variety show, but it's all adult. So I would say a burlesque is all burlesque could be considered cabaret, but not all cabaret could be considered burlesque.
Mm. Yeah,
so to me, cabaret is like an umbrella term of like, kind of like adult risque-esque entertainment. Like we have a really amazing writer poet who does like a haiku, adult haiku poetry stories, and I have a burlesque act with him. I'm not doing it at this show because I'm emceeing and too many hats, but he's going to be there. And so it is a 21 and over show, but it's not all burlesque acts per se. And then the striptease thing, I would say the difference between striptease and burlesque is burlesque usually has a story. It's comedic usually. And it has a story. It's more speaking to the audience than just like striptease, right? Whatever I can say about striptease. And so, I mean, I've seen, especially in neo burlesque, like I was telling Susan McKay the other day, I'm like, I've seen somebody dress up as a fish and put themselves in a fryer and turn themselves into a taco, like in burlesque.
Yeah.
I've seen somebody just mystify the audience and not do anything until the end and just remove her mask, and it was like, oh. So there's a little bit more, there's definitely more of like consciously pulling in the audience and like holding them into a story, much more than striptease, right? It's more of a storytelling.
I think of the movie Gypsy, where Gypsy Natalie Wood played Gypsy Rose Lee, mm-hmm. and the, you know, there's the tease. I mean, it's You know, you don't really see anything. It's just the tease that of imagining what might be there, you know.
Yeah.
Which I think is really interesting.
Exactly. You're letting people use their imagination. Exactly. And a lot of it, there's a lot of patience to it. Just staying, you know, knowing that like one arm raise is like huge.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember she had the feathers, you know, and she was dancing with the feathers. It was fascinating. You know, I find that really fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You do.
Mm-hmm. No,
I don't. Well, we'll see you, Gene.
We've noted, we've noted that.
Yeah. I'm just sitting here so uncomfortable. And I have wanted to come, but I need to overcome. I have a little something to overcome with burlesque because I had an ex-girlfriend who became a burlesque dancer after we broke up. But sort of how that just entered my world and how I found out about it. And then, so I have, you know, I just sort of have like this like block, this mental block around it. And just even that arm motion that you did, I was like, Amy, go to your happy place. Focus, focus, focus.
This could be therapy.
Yeah, yeah, it could be exposure therapy.
And you know, exposure therapy. See what I did there. And you're not the only person. I have another friend who's like, I just think like who's, you know, a little uncomfortable. I have two other friends, a friend that always buys tickets, and he's just like, it makes me uncomfortable. Like a strip club would make him uncomfortable because he's like, they're doing this for me. I don't want. So I totally understand that. What I would say is that, and I mean, and I understand that I try to choose acts and I try to create acts that aren't just like one dimensional, like take that off, there you go. Mm-hmm. You know, that, you know, is
the playful story.
Yeah. We want a playful story. And, you know, it's to me, hopefully it's not all about the sexual and the body. You know, a lot of times it's, I'm thinking of a couple of the acts that I'm not going to give away here that it's just kind of ridiculous, a little ridiculousness. So I would say that's what makes it feel a little bit different for me is that it's not, it's like, yes, you are watching somebody and looking at somebody sometimes take articles of clothing off, but the reason behind why they're taking it off isn't like the strip club vibe. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like that.
Well, there's a lot of agency, right? And there's a lot of, I mean, the great thing about the burlesque community is like how embracing it is of different body type, different performers, different stories, different audiences, like gender performance, right? There's so much like burlesque sort of opens the door in performance in a way that sort of commodification performances don't.
Yeah, it's not, people come to burlesque, and I don't want to offend anyone out there who works in strip clubs or anything like that, because that's totally fine. But it feels like burlesque, people come to it to be able to be seen, because they need to be seen in what they are going through in their life, or they want to be seen. Like, it's helpful for them. It gives them a place to be beautiful, to be seen, to be appreciated, to be entertaining. Maybe they don't have a typical body type that gets that kind of attention for lack of a better word. But then there's, you know, but they have ideas just like everybody else, and they have these amazing acts and this amazing way to use the audience just like everybody else. And I think people go to it as a point of like being able to like illuminate and enlighten themselves as a performer. And I'm not sure if that's the same for strip club. You know, I'm not sure that that's the same for like a strip tease, that it's like, I want this to make myself feel better about myself. Mm-hmm. Be like, that might not be the case. Maybe it could again.
You're being very careful. And understandably so.
One of the things that struck me about burlesque is the amount of humor. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of humor involved. I mean, I'm thinking of David and Janet doing this one routine in one of their shows where there's an old guy with an apple, I think. I can't remember now exactly all that was involved, but it was hilarious. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you're fascinated by all of the gymnastic things that happen, but then you're cracked up by the humor.
You're cracked up by the humor.
It's almost, you played the excerpt from Young Frankenstein.
Yeah.
You know, putting on the Ritz. Exactly. I mean, that's a form of burlesque.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That dance and the, you know, putting on the Ritz, you know, kind of thing. Exactly. You know.
Yeah, it's comical. It's some comical. Satirical about that age or that music. Yeah, right. I just thought of this, and I'm just going to say it live on the radio for the first time. is burlesque. When you think about like a little kid, like getting naked and being like, ooh, yeah. It's pretty hilarious. Like it's mm-hmm. it's innocent, hilarious. Sometimes I see burlesque like that. Like it's like, take away all of our stigma and right. all of, you know, sort of how we're supposed to feel and, you know, and not, you know, politeness and all that stuff. It's like being naked, being silly with our bodies. If we didn't have all the dogma surrounding it, it could be funny a little bit easier. Just like a little kid, they don't know. They're just being like naked and silly and going like, woo, woo, woo. And we're like, hee, hee, isn't that funny? So maybe burlesque has a little bit of that. I hope it has a little bit of that and less connotation of the other.
Yeah. You know, I think that everybody is desirous of that kind of release, that kind of tomfoolery and silliness. Tomfoolery. I've just thought of Shakespeare. You know, a lot of Shakespeare plays have asides mm-hmm. that are directed at what they call the pit. Mm-hmm. And the pit were the people who barely could, you know, pay anything to get in. And they thought that these people needed something that because they couldn't follow the, you know, they were, it's a little pejorative. But he'd always throw in these comical, you know, asides to in the middle of the serious play because he felt that people really wanted it and needed that. Yeah. And burlesque kind of addresses that nonstop, which is just fabulous, mm-hmm. you know. Did you have a comment or two there, Bruce?
A couple of questions. I mean, so you do burlesque, but you were part of Jeff Hoyt's, you know, It's Vashon Isle, right? Weren't you part of that performance?
Or am I? Yes, I did that. Right? There's so many shows and well, so many names that have Vashon in it. Like, this is Vashon, Vashon, this. Like, did right. I? The Alchemists. Yeah. Right, yeah, right. Because Arlette Moody was out of town, and right. Elaine and right. those guys, yeah, asked right. me if I would sing, and I've played music with Rick a right. bunch, and Chris O'Brien a little bit, but Elaine's such a great singer. I really just love what they do, and so is Arlette. I love them together, and yeah, that was really nice to be asked, and you know, we did a little dance and a little old time radio thing. That was fun. Yeah.
So you have a show coming up at the Snapdragon Black Cat Cabaret.
That's right.
June 22nd. So what can you tell us about that?
So there'll be two shows. There'll be a 6:30 show and a 9:00 show. So you have two opportunities to watch. That's going to be, like I said, there's a combination of burlesque acts. There is a poet. There are some song and dance numbers. The way I like to do generally with burlesque, there's like a person who comes after and picks things up. And generally we call those kittens. And usually it's like a little bit more like sexually loaded. But with my shows, I really like to do that, have that pickup person have like a comedic line that goes all throughout so we can count on them to come back. So we see that with Hallie Aldrich, who is Baby Steps. So she's my, you know, I'm emceeing. She's my little sidekick. She does all the cleaning. But, I mean, she's a really talented theater person and dancer and, like, contact improv thinker and stuff. So she's got some stuff up her sleeve. We have some things up our sleeves, just the two of us, that we'll be performing there. And then, there'll be some songs. About half the cast is from Vashon. I've got, Maya, that is the belly dance, does Bones Deep Belly Dancing. She will be there. Also, Indigo Reinerson. She's been gone for a little while, but she grew up here. Indigo Love will be back on the island for that. And the Naked Folk Singer is here, who is a Vashon person. I'm just going to let you all. I'm not even going to tell you everybody's name. Yeah. The Naked Folk Singer is here. I'm really looking forward to that act. She hasn't been on stage. She hasn't done this performance in quite a while, but she is a Vashonite. And we'll have a nice intermission. We're going to do a raffle and give out some like handmade prizes. I'm laughing because I have been hot glue gunning and making some really fun things. I've done this all different ways. You know, I took during COVID, I was down in Mexico a little bit, and I, you know, do one of my shows down there in Mexico. And so we always have different things to raffle. But I have found that having funny trinkets that people can wear to raffle are the best thing. You know, no serious like dance lessons or a dinner at, we're going all silliness. We're getting silly things for you to wear. So yeah, I hope that answers your question.
Yeah. So what other kind of things are you involved with? What else are you doing?
Well, I teach dance here on the island to adults. I teach ballroom Latin social dancing at the O Space. People are really, you know, what's great about that is I have a class called Lead and Follow 101 that isn't about ballroom, isn't about any steps. It's about learning to actually, because you're communicating with a partner, right? You're really like, close your eyes, pretend, you know, use each other as braille and listen to where you're moving and sort of feeling each other. So I do a class that's been really successful, Lead and Follow 101, with like really teaching people how to move in the three directions that we use, right? Thank God we only have 2 feet, forward, back, side to side. My jaw's a lot easier. And so we do a monthly party at Snapdragon. It's the last Saturday of the month. Social dance party where we dance tango, waltz, salsa, fusion, blues, swing, West Coast swing. And then, I also just, you know, I'll teach a West Coast swing series. I usually do series of threes. And then, I do private instruction. So that keeps me busy most of the time. And then I do a lot of helping with artists. Like I work, you know, in marketing, social media and things sometimes. And that's sort of, I got to there from like helping artists, different concert series, or, I did the Vashon Live thing. I think everybody probably remembers that from COVID, you know, Simon Clark and Bonnie Clark, putting those concerts together, sometimes 4-week concerts together during the pandemic. It was pretty wild. So I'll hop onto projects like that as often as I can. Or if artists are trying to like build their brand or anything. Just like art.
That fascinates me because how has that world changed? That sort of, you know, publicity, you know, what you're talking about. Because, you know, when you came here in 2008, you know, it was a very different world than it is today. Could you talk a little bit about that? Because it's fascinating to me.
Yeah. I would say promoting things is a lot harder these days than it was even just right before COVID. I mean, and I'm as bad as anybody else. I buy things last minute too. I can't really say anything, but you know, doing these shows is more stressful because you're getting 10 days out before chunks of tickets start going. So I've done it enough where I'm like, I know it'll be fine. I've done lots of shows in Seattle here. Like I know it will come. I mean, I went out on Friday night in a gold outfit with flyers, you know, like not good. I take it into my own hands. That's for sure. But I've talked to other industries too. And yeah, since COVID, selling ticket, you just don't know. You're white knuckling until like 6 days before. And then you're like, well, okay.
Vashon kind of does that anyway.
And Vashon probably does that anyway.
Yeah. They wait till the last second to do things.
But we have so much going on. We got to wait. You know, I mean, I think that's one of the biggest things. The other big thing that hurts me personally is that in Seattle, I used to do my shows at Columbia City Theater. That perfect. The other thing is it's hard to find venues. It's really, really, really hard to find venues, even in Seattle. You have the show box, not the show box is great, but that's a little bit beyond my, can't fill the show box yet, everyone. But the like the Rendezvous Jewel Box Theater holds about 60 people, same as Snapdragon. I can fit about 5 more people in there. And then you have the Triple Door, which is 300 people, and Columbia City's 150, sweet spot, you know. But Columbia City right now is being used as a heritage kind of museum for Columbia City Theater and like African American communities and stuff there. And so that's really cool. I actually want to go see that exhibit, but I am also waiting for them to open. So one of the hardest things is finding venues that are the correct size. That's why I have to have 2 shows. If I had a bigger place, well, you know, you pay more. It's all a juggle, right? Mm-hmm. The bigger the place, the more tickets you have, the more money you have, the bigger, you know. So venue size is an issue, and then like last minute tickets. Both of those things have sort of changed during the pandemic. But
so people should buy their tickets now.
I would love that.
And how should they do that?
So I'm not going to give you my ticket link because it is really long and annoying. So what I will say is you can Google product placement. Not that they need any product placement. You could Google Black Cat Cabaret promo tickets, and that'll bring it right up at the top and click. You also, if there's posters all over town, you can visit me. Post Emporium Productions is the production company. It's on Facebook and Instagram, as am I, Vixie Post on Facebook and Instagram. and Sarah Howard is also, you can't not find me, I think, if you're on Vashon. So yeah, if you Google Black Cat Cabaret promo tickets, those tickets will come up. And I feel like there was another question within there that I missed. No? Mm. Oh, there is one other thing. Yes, you can buy your tickets ahead. Yes. At the door, they're going to be a little bit more. Mm. So another incentive to get them early. And we do have VIP tables available, and they're going to be close to the stage and have like a little VIP pack, a little snack.
And remind us of the date again.
It's June 22nd. There's mm-hmm. a 6:30 show and a 9 p.m. show. So it's a Saturday at Snapdragon's Black Cat Cabaret.
Truman, before you ask your question, I'm curious, do the shows differ somewhat?
No, they're the exact show, but things can always be live
performance. Yeah.
Like, I tripped on the first show last year, but not on the second one. Okay. So.
Well, also, you know, you get a different vibe from the audience. You know,
absolutely.
And I'm sure that affects the
absolutely.
Performance.
Generally, the late night show is a little riskier, but it's really just the audience. Like, the performances aren't, it's the audience is a little, you know, wilder.
Respond to it.
And
yeah.
that
yeah.
is part of the show, right. is how the audience behaves is part of the show.
You know, just totally off the wall here, but you mentioned something about teaching ballroom dancing. Mm-hmm. You said how to follow and how to lead. You know, I'm a retired airline pilot. I said that we in our training, we talk about leadership and followership. Mm. I don't know if that's a real word, but we do talk about that.
It's a briefly word.
It is definitely a briefly word. But you know, I find that really interesting that those are two very different things. And followership is really important. I mean, mm-hmm. we're talking about our first officers and, you know, how they would have to follow the lead of the captain. But what you're talking about is exactly the same thing. You have to kind of give up part of your I don't know what, ego or whatever in order to follow that other person to do what they, you know, what they're needing. So anyway, I find that interesting.
Well, once people are a little bit more skilled, you know, you can switch back and forth from lead to follow.
Yes, exactly.
And if you're an experienced lead or a follow, you can give your follow opportunities and room to do, especially in social dancing. Not so much in ballroom. It's pretty...
Yeah, it's pretty straight.
But I mean, I teach my ballroom pretty open because nobody I'm teaching is going to compete.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I'm like, oh, that's not a traditional waltz move, but if she follows it or if they follow it, you can do it. You know, that's sort of because I really want it to be based on the action, on the feelings.
Right.
You shouldn't have to go, okay, we're going to do that one. Yeah, exactly. You know, everything, you know, you want to be able to lead and follow. And so it is true, leads, you know, like act clearly, be almost forceful, just be very clear.
Yep.
And then follows, it is harder than it looks. You don't get it at the beginning because the lead is doing all the, you know, is doing sort of learning to lead before you can follow. But once they can, following is harder than it sounds. It's like radical listening.
As they always said, that Ginger Rogers did everything that Fred Astaire did, only she did it backwards and in heels.
Exactly.
You know, so there you go.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Or if you're my wife and you have to lead and follow at the same time.
Well, they do that too. Yeah. I gotta try to get the follows to not lead. I'm like, he'll never lead or they'll never lead if you keep.
Oh no, she needs to. Because there's the other leadership style, which is lead from the back, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I lead from the back when my dancers go, are you leading or I'm leading? I'm like, well, you're leading, but I'm going to back lead you. It's very great. Yes.
I'm telling you what to do.
It's a blessing. Yeah. To those of us who can't dance, that's a blessing. Folks who can do that.
I can get to dancing all the time.
Where did you learn it to dance? Just over time?
Yeah, that's a good... No, I discovered partner dancing in L.A., like swing and salsa in L.A., and then, you know, didn't really, you know, just kind of dabbled. And then when I moved to the Northwest, there was a really rich dance scene. So I got involved in that, and then I started teaching at Arthur Murray and got a lot of the ballroom training and stuff there. And then kind of got a lot of the social dancing stuff with different trainers
good old
and
Arthur
out.
Murray, yeah.
Oh yeah, old school.
Right,
old school.
Yeah, that you cover the territory with all that.
I know. That's why I go like they're like, what do you teach? I'm like,
you name it.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll tell you what.
Oh, I have a quick announcement.
Yeah, yeah.
I just got a word that Heidi and her team made it to France from White Cliffs, 13 hours in 55-degree water. They're calling themselves the Salish Silkies.
Ooh,
that's pretty cool. But anyway, they're there. Cool. So
congratulations,
there
Heidi Skirper.
Yep,
that's great. Okay, and you did it. You indicated that the shows are limited to majors as opposed to minors.
Majors, 21 and over. Yes.
Okay. Hey, it's been great having you here. Is there anything you want to leave us with? This is the show, the Black Cat Cabaret, which appears at the Black Cat Cabaret at Snapdragon on June 22nd. Anything else you want to tell us before you go?
Gosh, I feel like I've talked your ear off.
No. You have given us lots of good information. That's for sure. It's been a real joy.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything at the off the top of my head, but just thanks for having me and letting me talk through all of my things, and come visit me, everyone.
Well, you know, we at the end of the show, we go over a few local, national, world hot topics, and we're going to do that for the next few minutes. And you are more than welcome to join in on that discussion.
All right.
So please.
Yeah, I'll sit tight.
Good, good. All right, Amy. Anything new with regards to our ferries?
We are on the struggle ferry right now, aren't we? It has it's been the one boat wonder down there, as we all predicted as the weather got better, and that's mechanical issues, a lot of it. But yeah, as we know, we had a rough weekend, but we do have a couple things coming up that are exciting. So tomorrow is we're doing Ferry Worker Appreciation Day. So that is to say thank you to the folks who are on the docks and on the boats, because without them, we could not live on this island at all. They actually make living on Vashon possible. So we're going to take some time to say thank you to them tomorrow. And then on July 1st, it is the first midday runs of the water taxi, everyone. So starting Monday, July 4th, we're going to have a July 1st, we're going to have a party down on the dock starting at 9 a.m. for the 9:25 a.m. sailing. We're going to have music. Our very own voice of Vashon, Susan McCabe, will be broadcasting down there to help us celebrate. And we'll have giveaways and ticket giveaways. And then we're going to get on the 9:25 boat and have a little press conference on the other side of the Coleman dock. We know Councilwoman Mosqueda will be there, and we are hoping that Emily Alvarado, a representative who got us the appropriation, will join us on the other side. So big ferry news coming up, and you know, it is all sort of part of the constant tick sort of, you know, every nail, right, builds progress towards building more power for our communities for ferry boat change, because that's how it's going to happen. And it's going to be time over time. We are going to speak together and lobby for Vashon to be prioritized, maybe get a third boat, and definitely try to be prioritized in crew and vessel assignment.
Well, you are doing a great job pushing to try to get that done. And as a community organizer, which is a good title amongst the many other titles you have, you really have brought the island together to put pressure on and look at all the different ways to deal with these ferry problems that
Thank
we have.
Thank you. Yeah. And I mean, that truly is where the power is, right? Is with all of us kind of getting on board and squawking together, as it were. And we are excited. We are launching sort of a formal, informal partnership with Flow, which is Ferry Lovers of Washington, which is our equivalent in the San Juans. So, you know, more power together. And we have long wanted to have regional collaboration in lobbying for improved service for ferry dependent communities. And we are making that happen. And that is a huge, huge piece that we hope to build on.
I love the fact that what is the phrase that we use here is fix our ferries?
Fixourferries.org.
Yep, fixourferries.org. Up in the San Juans, it's WTF.
Yeah.
Where's the ferry?
Where's the ferry? Which reminds us of Chris Anderson's Waiting for the Ferry from The Coop, which I hear he's got a second song.
He's working on it. Yeah, I think he may have it done.
Yeah.
We may hear it here at The Coop here soon. Let's change up a little bit. Hunter Biden was convicted today, three guilty verdicts. Any thoughts on the macrocosmic fact that he was convicted, or the microcosmic and the macrocosmic political implications?
Well, the fascinating thing is you've got two prominent political families who have been convicted of felonies. And so what's going to be fascinating is to watch what happens with the sentencing process for both of them.
Right.
And it's going to take the wind out of the sails of potentially both political parties, it's going to be interesting to see.
So, go ahead. I'm just curious about what you mean by that, Bruce. Do you think which one is going to come first? Do we know that yet? With sentencing?
The sentencing is 4 months away for Hunter Biden, and it's a month away for the ex-president.
Okay.
So, I mean, what I mean by wind out of the sails is essentially, you know, the Trump camp is trying to make a lot of windage, if you will, out of his conviction.
Right.
And it seems to me that depends on what that sentence is, and then depends on what the Biden sentence is.
Okay, I got it.
And those two working together will either reinforce the message that's coming from the MAGA wing of the Republican Party, or it will
take some of their impetus out of it.
It's going to be a really interesting dance, I think, is the way to look at it. We have a dancer here. You know how intricate dance can be.
The dancer just shaking her head and rolling her eyes.
The whataboutism, right? It is for better or worse, for truth. You know, we're talking about not even civil servant, right, versus someone who is allegedly a civil servant, right? And that whataboutism and false equivalency and, you know, how many other sort of arguments, right, logical fallacies can we bring in to our political world?
One of the better responses to the Hunter Biden conviction that I heard this morning was, oh, that's too bad, but I'm not voting for Hunter Biden.
Exactly.
You know?
Well, it's also fascinating to think about the Biden case really plays into the whole Second Amendment gun rights kind of thing in a fascinating way that will be interesting to
see how
the MAGA Republicans, who are very strong, you know, gun rights advocates, respond to this kind of thing. And will that case be overturned on Second Amendment kind of issues?
Yeah, that's
what's going to be fascinating.
That is one of the arguments that that you shouldn't have to put right down that you have this, that, or anything in order to have a gun. And so now you've got, you know, people who think that the Biden family is, you know, the mafia. But then you've got the First Amendment rights that cut the other way.
Well, if we look at some of the recent issues and how quick some of our folks were ready to turn on, well, states' rights should be ascendant in all cases, except for these. In which case, the federal jurisdiction, right? Like, we've definitely seen some political issues where certain folks have taken up, you know, states' rights are where it's at, and then very quickly said, no, this is a federal issue, or vice versa, right? So I think we know that consistency is not always winning the day.
No. The contrast here between the two convictions and the two parties couldn't be greater. I mean, President Biden has said he will not pardon his son, whereas our ex-president had no problem pardoning a whole slew of people and kind of avoided the whole process that most presidents prior to him had gone through. So
is this possible that Trump is going to support Hunter Biden because of the Second Amendment?
No.
In a word, no.
Will Donald Trump pardon Hunter Biden?
There you go.
Or will he pardon himself? Yeah. That's the issue.
Yeah. And can he pardon himself?
Yeah, not from a state.
Hasn't been resolved as to whether or not he can do it at the federal level.
Yeah.
So,
where are we? Are about done?
We got about 30 seconds.
30 seconds. So, I am going to thank everyone then for Sarah Howard, Amy, Kevin, who's not with us, Bruce, Truman, and myself. Thank you for joining the Brown Briefly. Next week, Bruce, what do we got?
We've got Gene Finley coming in. Gene was a co-author with me on the photo history of Vashon Island, but she wrote a book called The Mosquito Fleet of South Puget Sound. And so she's a real expert on the mosquito fleet. And we're looking at whether or not the mosquito fleet's going to come back. And so it's going to be an interesting discussion about what it was then, you know, how it worked, what the issues were, many of which we are the same issues we have now.
Absolutely.
So it'll be an interesting sort of way to look at where we are now versus where we were 100 years ago.
We look forward to that.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Until then, enjoy all life has to offer. More or less. Bye now.